What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Big One Podcast. This is your weekly motorsports podcast, and we sometimes do a very long one, a very big one, and we had a special guest on last week, which was a lot of fun. We are your NASCAR podcast, IndyCar podcast. We're planning on doing a little bit of a different format this year for F1. We'll probably be continuing to bring on a guest every couple of weeks to give us a recap of what's been happening on track, who's hot, who's not, and who's been winning those races. As always, our Twitter is at podcastbigone, emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. This has been B-Boy and Baby G doing your intro, and I will do a quick sponsor, and then B-Boy will be here, but he's a little busy at the moment. So our sponsor this week is NASCAR Yoga. So a little bit of a fun one here. You know, when we've got these cautions during NASCAR races, sometimes you just got to get down on the ground and do some yoga. It's a good way to stay loose, stay limber. Make sure you're ready to go when your favorite driver wins, because we know we're all getting lucky when that happens. So what's up, B-Boy? Welcome back to the Big One Podcast.
Damn, a minute in before he ever allows his co-host to speak. That's got to be a record, in my opinion. I've gone on some rants before, but not right out of the gates. Yeah, here's B-Boy. I'm pantsless this week. Yeah, I don't even think you knew that. I'm on camera, but I don't think you can see.
Chest up, baby.
Yeah, pantsless. My sponsor for the week is Miralax, because last week we could not shit and get off the pot, and sometimes you need Miralax to get you through it. So Miralax, here for all of life's moments when they get a little stuck. Great, let's jump right into some storylines. First off, Denny Hamlin says he expects next year will be his final full season. Where did we hear this? What's going on?
I saw this on Twitter, so I don't know if he came out and said this on his podcast or if he said it on an interview or what, but I saw that one of the guys, either like Bianchi or Gluck or Pockrass, one of them tweeted this, which is very surprising to me. I was expecting Denny to do at least two more years after this year, but who knows, man.
Why do you think two more years? Like, what was that part come from?
I don't know. It was just my thought process, and he hasn't really said, you know, any number of definitive years at this point. He's always just kind of been mentioning here and there, like, you know, I'm coming towards the end. I might have X amount of races left, and I guess he did say near the start of the season, I only have maybe like 60-something races left, so that would make sense. It'd be like this year, next year, and then he's going to maybe hang it up here, which is crazy because he's still at the top of his game.
Well, that was the contract where we hardly ever know what contract lengths are, but when he got announced for his extension, that was before last season, and so he must have gotten a 3-year extension. At the time, it was an extension with Chris Gabehart taking over the race director role at JGR, right? And that's what he did last year, and then now we're in another NASCAR case about that. And you know, besides all the tragedy that's gone on in Denny Hamlin's family, which is brutal, and you know, say it's a tragedy, whatever you want to say, but him losing the championship again last year, those things are going to weigh on him too. But I think the Gabehart thing weighs on him quite a bit too. I think that was a guy that was a good friend of his. He thought he was going to win a championship with him. And I, for what it's worth, like, as we've been covering it, my thought has been, I wonder what Denny thinks, and I wonder if Denny is still kind of in Gabehart's corner, you know, still JGR faithful, but in Gabehart's corner a little bit to be like, I support my friend. Until the day, like a couple weeks ago, when he tweeted like about Gabehart and was just like, no, you clearly stole documents. Like he did all the accusations that JGR is accusing them of, which actually like changed my opinion of the court case. Because I don't think Denny says any of that unless he firmly believes it and to go against his friend. Anyway, long story short, this, I think, just like all this other stuff's weighing on him, and he just wants to have fun. And I think like he is such a competitor. I mean, like in such a bad way. Like, you know, you see competitors sometimes that just like eats their soul alive, and he is one of those folks. And there's gonna be part of me that will be happy if he gets the championship, but a part of me too is just like, I don't know, maybe he doesn't deserve it. he can be the best that never won one at this point. Like it was Mark Martin for sure, and I think now it's Denny Hamlin. And he could just royer that crown, and he can go and hopefully win a championship with his team, with another driver. And I think, you know, hey, that could even happen this year. So, Fingers crossed on that one. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. extends his contract with Hayek Motorsports, formerly AKA, I know that team has changed his name a million times, but Ricky Stenhouse has been a staple for this team since switching over from RFK when they did the old Buescher Stenhouse Jr. switch. Any comments on this extension?
Yeah, it seems to make sense. I mean, Ricky Stenhouse is one of those guys that he's going to get you what the car has in it. He's not going to trash your race cars. He's not going to underperform. If he's got a 20th place car, he's probably going to finish somewhere between 22nd and 18th, right? It's one of those guys where he does well on super speedways. I don't know, he's okay on the road courses. He's okay on the mile and a halfs, and he's kind of just doing what he can with the equipment. So I think it's good. I mean, he's bringing good sponsorship to that program. He seems to be well-respected in the garage. As much as we joked a couple years ago about the whole Recce Spinhouse thing, I mean, that was kind of more facetious and joking than anything. He's a really good driver, and I'm glad he got an extension.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that not too long ago we were talking about the guys that make Cup win five or six races in their entire career and will never be thought of as well as maybe Justin Allgaier, who wins a lot more races and wins championships at a lower series, right? Like how do you compare the two? Honestly, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is probably better. Like, just straight up, he's probably better than Justin Allgaier. But he's going to race at this level for a very, very, very long tenure. Like, by the time he's done, he will have raced more races than 99—he's in the 98th percentile at that point. Like just in terms of how long he will have raced. And that speaks something to who he is as a driver. I agree that I think he's like a good driver, but the thing that I've always seen about Ricky Stenhouse and totally the Recce Spinhouse and what he does at super speedways is blown out of proportion. We like to make fun of it too, here on the Big One podcast. He's super aggressive and he either wins or he finishes, finishes top five or he wrecks. But outside of those races, he's actually really, really careful with the car. And he does a really good job of making sure it comes home in one piece. And that matters to this single car operation that doesn't want to be putting money into brand new cars every week, right? They're okay if we finish 20th with the car intact as opposed to finishing 12th with a beat up car or wrecked with a beat up car, right? They would much prefer that. And he's a really good, solid driver for that. The other thing, too, is like, Hayek Motorsports doesn't have any affiliations with like Spire or anyone else. So there's no young kids that are like waiting for a ride that are going to jump into this. And also the amount of like young kids that want to jump into this kind of ride is pretty low. Like Josevar, when he signed with Spire, it was like, oh, well, he's doing that so he can get to Cup sooner. Well, it's worked out for him. Spire's obviously like grown with him and is a much better team than it was when he started. But, like, had Carson made the jump to Hayek Motorsports, I don't think Carson's a race winner, for straight up. And he's also probably not competitive week in, week out. It's just, this isn't going to be a team that can be led by a junior driver. It is more likely going to be led by Ricky Stenhouse, or they were going to bet on, you know, like Daniel Suarez just did to move to Spire, like a Daniel Suarez type, where he's going to bring some sponsorship, and he's a veteran, and he knows how to take care of a car. Ryan Preece would be another good person that could ride in a Hayek Motorsports car and do really well. So good for Ricky. Happy he's sticking around. He's a stable presence in the field. And I also like it when him and Kyle Busch get in fights. So let's hope for more of that.
Absolutely. Next up, we've got NASCAR. We'll be putting PJ1 and Resin down from the top to bottom in the corner. So what this means is all the way across the track, every lane fully covered with resin for the All-Star race at Dover this weekend. So NASCAR looking to spice up a cup race that I don't think anybody is very excited about. It's a All-Star race at Dover, which during the day at noon. Yeah, I was going to get to that down in our next section when we get to it. But yeah, the Monster Mile at noon in Dover, Delaware. I don't know that this is a draw for anybody. And it's unfortunate that a track that has been, I think I heard on the schedule since 1969 with a points race, and this is the first year they don't get one. That's just crazy to me that they went away from it for kind of a throwaway weekend here for the Cup Series.
Yeah, for what it's worth, like, this generation of car hasn't been the best at Dover, but I was excited for them to go here with the new package, more horsepower, because it works a little bit better. It's a concrete high bank It's basically a bigger Bristol, if there's a good way to think about it. Not as high banked, obviously, as Bristol, but Bristol's a shorter track. So, but it's a concrete racetrack, which means it's gritty on the tires. It is slick, and it's not as grippy as asphalt. What happens when you put PJ1 on concrete? It becomes an asphalt. It obviously not exactly the same, but it basically does. So where are we actually racing this weekend? I don't know. Is it Vegas? What's the 1 mile equivalent of this? Because it's not Dover. It's not the reason that we like to go to Dover. And one thing that has really sucked with the next gen car is those wider tires and the extra patch that you kind of have, and that actually has ruined Dover because it was a better track when it was slick. And this has now turned it the complete opposite direction. Maybe they're hoping for the 1 mile, slightly less drafty version of Atlanta. I actually have no clue what they're going for. If anything, I guess I'm for it because it makes it interesting. I have no clue what this weekend's going to be like. I have no race breakdown for this weekend. But to your point, I'm also not excited about it at all. So we'll talk about it a little bit more in a sec. So let's get in some race recaps. Truck, stage one, we had Daniel Hemric taking home stage one. Stage two, we had Connor Zilish coming out there and winning that one. And stage three, we had Caden Honeycutt taking the race for his first career win in the truck series, or in any of the top three series of NASCAR. And also, we were Watkins Glen. I forgot to say that. Watkins Glen for all three races this weekend. What'd you see out there? What highlights do you want to cover?
This is interesting because you said his first major NASCAR win, but before this truck race, he did win the ARCA race as well. So yes. We're not considering ARCA a major.
I said top three. I made sure.
And then he also did go on to win two Cars Tour races this weekend. So he actually had four wins in one weekend, which is pretty baller. Wow. So very
That's
cool there.
Awesome.
Good job for Caden. I mean, this is a guy that was going to break through at some point, and he gets it done here. So getting into some of the other items in this truck race. So we had Destiny Spurlock, who unfortunately didn't qualify. And then Natalie Decker couldn't even make minimum speed. So pretty unfortunate stuff there. And I can't remember if the trucks didn't qualify because they didn't qualify because of rain, or if she just didn't qualify because she didn't qualify. I don't recall. I was kind of out of it until I heard the race start and she wasn't in it.
Yeah, that's a really good question because I didn't really notice it either. I saw your comment and I didn't go to look at it. I assumed that meant because it rained or something, but I don't think they had any rain. So maybe they did qualify and she just didn't make it. But
yeah, unfortunate.
Getting
into the race itself, so stage one was relatively uneventful, but then on a lot of these road courses, you'll get the guys flipping the stage. So that's why Daniel Hemric won that first stage. Brent Cruz, who was leading all of stage one, he flips the stage and a bunch of other guys come and follow him. So that usually just leaves some guys who choose to stay out and get those points at the end of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Coming into stage two then here, Connor Zilich immediately jumps up and gets at the front of the field. So you expect that. Connor Zilich dominated in the O-Raps series last year, especially on the road courses. So no surprise there that Zilich worked his way up to the front. I don't know if you saw this Chris Wright issue when he kind of went off track and then he hit that sand trap, and he was actually able to just drive right through it because like we anticipated, the track was awfully wet on the outside on the grass and the sand. So normally you go into that sand and you're just beached and they're going to have to either drag you out of there. But he ended up just driving right through that thing, getting to the back patch of grass and driving back on track, which was awesome. You never see that at these road courses.
It's just like that in-between sand, you know, when you first get on the beach, right off the dunes, obviously, like, it's really hard to walk. The sand is so fine. And then you get to, like, the medium wet where, like, the water is hitting it, but it's not, like, soaked through. And it's that you could literally drive on that sand. Speaking of that, Washington beaches, you can drive on the beaches here. It's really cool. It's kind of like a Daytona days. But yeah, it's because the sand is all wet. And so, like, that's essentially what you're dealing with here. The other thing, too, is he kept his momentum up, which is always big. Even when you go through the sand traps at, you know, at Watkins Glen or anywhere else in a road course, if you can keep your momentum going, if you're pointed forward in a direction, don't turn your wheel at all. Just keep it straight, and you'll eventually end up out of it on a service road, and you can get back. You just got to keep that momentum up, and that's exactly what he did. So,
end of stage two, Brent Cruz again flips the stage, so he's not worried about those stage points. He's going for the win. Ross Chastain had worked his way all the way up into, I believe, second or third. He follows suit, and then after that, a ton of guys just come and flip the stage trying to go for that race win, and I've got a comment here, including B-Boys guy Daniel Hemric.
Yeah. Well, Danny Hems, we're going to talk about him and how he finished, because it was like everyone that I talked shit about last week when we went through the standings decided to show up this weekend. But it was a road course race, and I'm glad they did. So keep moving along. Chastain led most of stage three. I forgot about this. Connor Zilish body slams Cruz for second and almost puts him into the tire back. Yeah, he just kind of got loose. It was turn one, right? He just kind of got a little loose, and you say body slam, he more like fishtailed him. He like smacked him with his rear, but yeah, just enough to like knock Cruz out. Turn one's weird here, right? You've got this nice little banking. It actually curves in right as you get to the corner, but as soon as you do, it banks back out. And so as you're coming back out of the corner, and they didn't use to have those tire packs, you used to run wide because it banks back outward, and it's kind of like you go over a hill and it tilts you back to the other side. It sends you further wide. Well, the guys had to really compensate for that. You could not be outside of the bottom lane or like next to a guy as low as you can. If you were three or four wide, you had to go so slow on the outside, because if it started to throw your momentum outward, you're going to slam into a tire pack, which a couple people did. And so for Cruz, unfortunately, all it takes is a little fishtail slap, and that will knock you up, and you have to get off the gas. Cruz actually, this is where he dodges the tire packs, right? He goes through them.
Yep.
And comes back in like fifth. I mean, like, he did a really good job of coming back onto the track. I didn't know what the rules were. I was like, does he have to stop? Like, I thought it was gonna be way more disastrous for him. He did a really good job coming back in. But there's a caution with 12 to go for Grant Enfinger. Man, that team, the whole team, not just Enfinger, had a really terrible race. But it's really good for Chastain here, because he was not good on fuel, so he's able to come in and get, or no, he didn't come in. He just he stayed out, right, and just had the caution laps to save fuel. Is that right?
Without a doubt, yes, he did.
Okay,
yep,
cool. Restart with 11 to go. Hosovar goes around for a caution. Man, we had a lot of cup guys in this one, by the way. Wasn't this this was the record race for most cup, whatever we call them, craft whackers. Hosovar goes around. I'm glad I just don't want to see any of those guys out there. Chastain went early on the restart. This was interesting. Do you want to break this part down?
I do, yeah. So there's the restart zone, obviously, that we've got in the NASCAR series, all three of them. And was this the one? I can't remember. Was this the one where, like, he didn't go early, but he did go early, or someone else behind him launched and then he went? I don't remember exactly what happened here.
The way the zone is, because, like, the way they had been restarting at Watkins Glen forever was you restarted coming to the line. What happened, though, is so many people would barrel into turn one. And it would be a wreck fest down in turn one, right? Because, like I said, it is like a narrow kind of corner that you want to be as low as you can for. And the guys would go into it four wide, especially like in the truck series. It would be wild. And so what they did was they said, okay, well, no, we're not going to like change the restart zone mid-race. We're going to start all the series by having the restart zone be before you go into the last corner. And so before you even get to the straight. And so you had this like smaller restart zone, but you could restart anywhere, including going into the next corner. And that's why so many guys would take the outside, because then they're pointed the most straight coming out of that corner, and they can keep their speed as long as you're the control car. So Chastain just tries to do what everyone else did. Start on the outside and get going, and then just like use his momentum through the corner and down the whole long stretch to be completely clear of anyone else and be able to go into the corner without anyone beside him. The problem is, he guns it like at least a car length early. It's like a car length and a half early. It was way too early. And they're just watching that. They're basically like, yeah, if he had gunned it and then let off the gas or like hit the brakes and like gotten back in line and then gunned it again, it would have been totally fine. But he guns it and he stays on it from then on. And so he did go early. And I get he was like upset and pissed off. I think in his interview, he was like, if they said I went early, like sarcastically, dude, you went early. It's very obvious. And those are the rules. I don't understand why a guy that races on Sunday is having trouble with very simple rules. But, you know, maybe his wife's distracting him, or his girlfriend, or whatever she is. Most plastic thing I've ever seen on the planet. And there goes Ross joining the Big One podcast, I guess. But anyway, he gets a penalty. Fuck him. Don't care. What else happened?
Yeah, then we've got another restart. Immediate wreck. Caution with three to go. So we're entering shit show territory here. But that's what's fun about these road courses, right? You've got the late race chaos. If you do get a yellow with, I don't know, what it was, 11 to go, you had a caution for Hosvar. And then once you get that, it's the gloves are off. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going for it on every restart. And that's why I think when the Cup Series started adding more road courses a number of years back, people were all about it because you'd have these late race restarts, guys beating and banging with each other. Mm-hmm. But this one did set up a really good overtime finish. Do you want to walk us through Honeycutt won this thing?
Yeah, so the one thing I want to call out too is before, like two restarts ago when after Chastain went early, someone else does jump a restart, and I don't remember who it was. It wasn't Brent Cruz. It was Brent Cruz, wasn't it? I think he was running second, and he restarts second next to Honeycutt, and it's probably those two are going to race for the win. And honestly, Brent Cruz looked like the best car. And so Brent Cruz jumps the restart, beats Honeycutt to the gas. And they have to do that thing where, exactly like you were saying, like, did he go, did he not go? They have to do that thing where they're watching the telemetry and saying, oh, no, he went. Because the advantage is very minimal. He was on the inside, Honeycutt took the outside, and he just gets a slightly better restart on the inside. And they have to, they let it go. There's that caution again, and then they re-rack it for a green-white checkered. And at that point, they have to call him and say, like, sorry, you went early. You're going to have to go to the back. And Brent Cruz, we talked about it a couple times here, he's knocking on the door of a win as well. And it honestly, I thought he was going to get his first here. He does not. And instead, Honeycutt gets to restart first. And on this, he's got one of the best in the business. Zilish is right there. SVG, by the way, in these last couple of restarts, has been moving back up because he had a ton of damage from like a pit road thing, I think, earlier. He's been moving up. He ends up finishing third, I think. So he's like right there too. I mean, he had a lot of guys he had to beat, and Caden Honeycutt went out there and won. And I loved the emotion. It's exactly why I was mad at Ty Gibbs, is because like, this is the kind of emotion that I want to see. And I get that Ty Gibbs is his first Cup win and not his first win overall, but like it should matter to you. And people can show emotion however they want. But this is the emotion that I love to see when guys win. This is what, you know, when I'm watching races and silently, I don't care where I am. I could be on a bus. I could be a public place. I will turn my phone up just to hear the emotion of a guy's first win. And I want it to pay off. And Honeycutt's did. He had a really cool celebration. What did he do?
After he won the ARCA race, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, he said, if I win that truck race, I'm going to go in the crowd and shotgun a beer with some fans. And he ends up doing it. It was a bit of an interesting technique of the shotgun because, you know, he gets the beer and then he doesn't have anything to pop it open.
Yep.
And then he opens it and he's like drinking it out of the normal top of the can. And it's like, that's not how you shotgun a beer, right? You poke a hole, you crack it, and then you drink it through the silo or whatever. So it's like, that was a bit of a fail. So this guy clearly didn't go to college. He doesn't have the education that we college degree educated men have here, but it was fun to see all together.
I'm gonna sidestep you here and say I think he did the best that he could without making it become cliche, because yes, it's now it's like he won and he said he was gonna do it, so he's gotta do it and all this shit, but like he was like, how do I get to the fans? They need to open that gate. You can hear him like talking to this while they're trying to do the post-race. He's like, I'm trying to do the thing that I said I wanted to. Oh, I can't do that part? Okay, well, how am I going to get a beer? Do y'all have beer? Oh, my crew has a beer? Oh, great. Well, I'm nothing. Okay, at this point, fuck it. I'm just going to drink a beer. It doesn't matter. He's gone too far. You know, had it taken 10 minutes to set this thing up, the whole thing would have been over. SVG could have punted 20 rugby balls in that period, so... I liked it. I thought it was cool. It's, you know, yeah, measuring up to Hosvar a couple weeks ago is not going to happen, but it was really cool to see him win his first race and enjoy it the way that you should. Last call out here, Mini Tyrell and Daniel Hemric finished top 10 because B-Boy talked shit about them last week. Actually, all the Ram guys finished well. I think they all finished top 12. And they had four. They had, you know, all four with AJ Allmendinger and I forget who all was racing Rams this week, but they did really well. Cool. Any last comments on the truck race?
Fun truck race from Watkins Glen. I enjoyed it.
Me too. And the trucks are not always the best on road courses, so I love it. Cool. O'Reilly, let's break it down. First off, stage one, Brent Cruz, the youngest O-Rap stage winner of all time, I'm guessing. Yeah?
That's what
that means. Cool. Stage two, Connor Zilish gets it done. And stage three, the man, the myth, the legend, three in a row. He's never lost in the O-Rap series at Watkins Glen. Connor Zilish gets it done. But God damn, was it in dramatic fashion. Let's build up to it. Let's talk about what happened. What did we see out there?
Let's do it. Yeah, like you said, absolutely dramatic fashion in this one. I picked up the notes here on stage two. So Brent Cruz and Connor Zilich were kind of the belle of the ball the entire thing throughout the first two stages. So really not a lot to talk about on those. The one thing that I do want to talk about, though, is Brent Cruz picking up 19 stage points. That's a really good day already just through the first two stages. You racked up those 19 points. And then SVG is third at the end of stage two. So the big baddie SVG, he is looming, and he's on the heels of these young guys. But,
well,
with the, yep, I was going to say, a drum roll. With that being said, big damage as SVG pulls out of his pit box and Connor Zilich drills him. So absolutely big damage for SVG that kind of just ended his competitiveness there for the day.
Yeah. And actually, maybe this is what I was thinking of, and I'm getting the two races confused about the pit lane damage. But something set him back in the truck race, and I don't remember what it was. Something set him back, but this was the big pit damage that took him out. And this is honestly, I mean, I know he didn't win the truck race, but like, this is the only thing the Cup guys can really hope for in beating SVG. I guess we'll get to that in a second. But cool. Well, he's not the only one that has some big damage. Sheldon Creed misses it's the exit of the bus stop, the 1, 2, 3, 4th corner coming out of the bus stop there. He kind of gets pushed off a little bit, but he basically goes through, and you see him, he's off the gas, you see the fire out of the pipes, he's on the brakes a little bit, which honestly actually makes it worse. And all that wet, that front end is so close to the ground, it just catches. And man, did it launch him. It just tore the whole radiator, the radiator pan, which is connected to the splitter, and rips the whole splitter under the tires and just throws him up in the air so bad that what the parts of the splitter and stuff that go under the car shot out the back and popped the back plate off the back. I mean, just honestly, like, what a crazy... It was cool to see. I bet that fucking hurt.
Yeah,
you know?
Dude.
Like you've been in one of those roller coasters when they use the brakes way too hard and you're like, oh, fuck. Yeah, like that, but maybe worse. Man, could not have been fun, and ruins Creed's day. He was having a pretty good day. He's not good at road courses. He was a pretty good day. So
Sam Meyer goes off the course at one point on this one, and he just rolls through the sand, kind of goes through the tire packs, and then just rejoins. Like,
yeah,
it's no big deal. It's like, is that cool?
I think they were just like, yeah, they were like, you went through enough. It's okay. It's fine. Yeah, I it was just like the same thing I had with the truck racer. I was just like, I don't understand what the rules are here.
I don't either.
They probably told them something, and he must have been okay. So, whatever.
Continuing to build towards the end of this thing, there was a bit of a intermingling of strategies. So, some guys had to save fuel, some didn't. The two ones that I do want to call out that were saving fuel that looked really good for a lot of this race were Jesse Love and Austin Hill, a couple others as well. But then you get, you know, you hear the radio or the word from the broadcast, and Connor Zilich has the all out. So it's like, uh-oh, these guys better not save too much or Zilich is going to hunt them down. So with eight to go, Jesse Love is told he's good to go on fuel. He can go flat out. So he starts whipping that horse.
Well, and it's funny because I think you end up messaging me. You said, like, the zero is a setting duck, or, like, Zilich is going to catch up or something like that. And I literally said, well, it depends. It depends on when they say that Jesse Love can go. And it was, like, maybe two laps later that they were like, go. And, you know, that's how it is. You would rather save and get to a point where, and, you know, they do this by, like, calculating the seconds based off of what the optimal lap time should be. They go, okay, you save 4 seconds of fuel. That equates to this much which is, you know, so much that we need. And that's how they do it. And they kind of back you up. And then they want to get you to where you have a couple laps where you can go hard. Because the guy that's behind you is not going to let up. And as soon as he gets to you, you want you, your best shot is to stay at the same speed as him and be able to block him at your full speed. You can't do that if you're going to run out of gas. So you have to stay more aggressively earlier so you can go further. But it still wasn't going to matter. Zilish was still going to get there, I think, probably with 1.5 or 2 to go. But Zilish goes through the grass in the bus stop, similar to what Creed did. And when he does that, the splitter digs in. This time, it's the right front of the splitter. And what it does is it kind of bends it inward, breaks a piece off. That piece actually gets stuck underneath the right wheel for a second. Remember, these splitters are strong as fuck. And so when that happens, he's lucky that the splitter actually shoots underneath the car and eventually breaks off. Because it could have stayed where it was and made it like he's racing on skates with, you know, 3 tires on the pavement and 1 on nothing. Or it could have gotten pushed up into his wheel well, which would have cut his tire and ended his day. I mean, there's just like a million different ways that this could have went badly for him. It went just well enough for him to continue his pursuit and break down the final lap here, because it's dramatic and insane.
This was an amazing final lap. So unbelievable that Zilich got as lucky as he did that splitter broke and it just kind of flies off the car, because I was like, oh no, like he's mm-hmm. done. Like,
he's done for.
It looked like he was done. Like, goes through the bus stop, like you said, way overcooks it through the grass just because he's going flat out, being as aggressive as he can, trying to catch Jesse. Mm-hmm. And then Jesse Love is doing a fantastic job of keeping Zilich behind him. And then on the literal last corner, turning right to go to the start-finish line into the end of the race, he makes his one mistake of, like, these last 8 laps where he is pushing hard, mm-hmm. overcooks it, and Zilich just drives right underneath him, right past him for the win. And it's really, oh, man, you could tell Love took this hard, because his post-race interview, he was just like, this is the most embarrassed I've ever been in my entire life, was, I believe, an exact quote. And to back up a little bit, like, these guys are great friends. They hang out all the time, like, the best of buds. And honestly, Jesse Love won the championship last year, but everybody mm-hmm. knows that Connor Zilich was the elite driver in the O'Reilly series last year. So
yeah.
I think that's wearing on Love a little bit, that this was his chance to kind of get back at him, beat him one-on-one when, you know, Zilich is up in the Cup Series. He's kind of passed him by a little bit at this point, and it was like he really wanted this one.
Absolutely. Connor drives on Sundays, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if Jesse Love goes out there and wins another Saturday championship. It's a Saturday championship, and he wants to race on Sundays too. And he probably will. I imagine Kyle Busch's ride will be up for grabs here in about half a second. So, that said, I talked shit about Kyle Busch. We'll see how he does on Sunday. Perfectly broken down, honestly. I don't even know that I have too much to say here. I think Jesse Love, as you said, is embarrassed because it was an unforced error. The way Zilish drove him and the way that Connor and Jesse are friends means that I don't think he was going to wreck him. I think he might have gotten to his bumper and tried to shove him a little bit, but not Ambrose and Brad Keselowski, not Buescher and SVG. Like I think he's going to do it in a very nice way. And he does, going into turn 10, the second to last corner, he does kind of push it, but not that hard. He could have ran right into his bumper and just, like, missed the corner and did what he had to do to win that race. If it was Austin Hill, I think Connor does it. I think Connor would wreck him and just win the race. But he's not going to do it. And guess what? He wasn't going to do it in the final corner either. In fact, he raced so hard. He was about 1.5 seconds back going into the final lap. He overcooks, like, Connor does, like, 3 or 4 corners in this pursuit. And as has happened in the past for other drivers trying to get it done and from second place, he honestly ruins his chance at winning this race. If Jesse just has a normal corner, Connor can't get to him. He literally can't, because he messed up his turn 10 trying to get to him there. And he didn't think about, let me just have 2 perfect corners and see what I can get. He actually ruined it. But then Jesse ruined it more. So 2 drivers trying to throw. Jesse Love's the one that comes out the loser. He did get a consolation hug from Connor's mom on pit lane. I thought that was sweet.
Great, great O'Reilly's race from Watkins Glen. Let's move on into the Cup Series. We'll jump right into the stage winners. Stage one, Ross Chastain. Stage two, SVG. And stage three and race winner, no surprise here, Shane Van Gisbergen wins at Watkins Glen. The king of the road courses does it again.
Yeah, we said it earlier too, just like if SVG needs to be in an accident or something has to happen to his car for him not to win this race. Like, it's just, that's where he's at. And I thought it, like, Michael McDowell said something in this post-race interview, because he had a really, really good race. And it looked like he had one of the best cars, if not the second best car out there. And he was just like, dude, still got my ass whooped. Like, I wasn't even close.
Yes.
I think it was one of the more dominant Watkins Glen races ever. One of the most dominant road course races ever. And SVG, I think, even said, like, I didn't even have my best race. And we know these track house cars aren't that great, right? So, like, I mean, he's just so much better right now. And I'll say, of all of the road courses, Watkins Glen fits his style of racing, what he did in Aussie Superstars. It matches his style the best. It's fast corners. It's all about conserving, keeping your car in a straight line while running these fast corners, trying not to burn tires. It's exactly what SVG has been racing his entire life. And so this is his best racetrack, I think, technically. And yeah, I mean, he would have had it been an accident for someone else to beat him. Breaking down some of the action here, we said caution for someone's canopy on the track, one of the only incidents Fox caught all day. Nailed that one. Yeah, they missed literally everything else. As has been the case at a couple of the short tracks and anything besides the mile and a half or mile tracks, Fox just doesn't have cameras at the track, I guess, because they never have fucking anything. And I've got to go to Twitter and I've got to go find, like, search Bubba and be like, oh, that's how he spun? Great, now I know. Cool. And, like, figure these things out while things are going on. But you're right. They did get the shot of the canopy. Canopy's got to be right up there with the Tropicana Orange from Chicagoland a bunch of years ago that ran wild. But yeah, guys, fucking tie down your canopies. I have never, ever gone to a tailgated event and not staked in my tent. And yes, I am an anxious person and I'm worried that that would happen. But it also is fucking next to my car. And have you ever seen one of those tents hit a car? It does gnarly damage. I do not want that fucking thing happening. Whoever that is, fucking idiot of the week. So stupid. But guess what? We need more cautions in this race to make it interesting. So what else happened?
Tyler Reddick comes in because they anticipated a yellow flag when Josh Balicki literally just runs over Catherine Legg at the back half of the field. And I watched the radio active today and he goes, oh man, her car was just like light on its feet. And it's like, no way, dude, you just literally ran her over.
He just missed the corner.
missed the corner. I'm like, bro, what world are you living in? That was just unfortunate because when you see a car spin, the crew chief or the spotter sometimes just have to make a quick reaction, and Reddick decided to come in. Just about everyone else stayed out, so he kind of just got screwed on strategy for that unfortunate spin.
Yeah, it doesn't end up ruining his day, so that's cool. You have the note, an SVG Masterclass makes up a 22-second gap in the third stage. I guess we jumped already to the third stage, but unstoppable if things don't go totally wrong on road courses. We've hit that a couple times, and yeah, I mean, the 22-second gap, he's got the better tires, which does matter, but honestly, he could have done it on the same tires. That's how much better he was than everyone else out here. And it really was. This is Fox coverage issues as well. I get that they can't cover everything, but you clearly know that SVG is the guy to watch. Why aren't we showing him pass every single car he has to pass? I would, like, fuck the... And I get that, like, it was Connor Zilich and... who was
54 Gibbs.
With? Ty Gibbs, that's right, Ty Gibbs. And their battle was fun. He was catching him, and oh, he might be able to pass. It didn't matter. I only wanted to watch SVG. I wanted to see if he overcooks a corner and wrecks. Like, that would have been dramatic. That would have been insane. We all knew what was coming, and they should have just had the camera on him the whole time. But, yeah, what else? What else you got?
Same thing as SVG. So Michael McDowell was on that same strategy where he had the tire advantage, came in later than everybody else, and he drove right through the entire field just like SVG did.
Same way.
And it's unfortunate that he was kind of, you know, disappointed in himself after the race. But, like, honestly, dude, you did the same thing that one of the best road course drivers in NASCAR history, a guy that's been doing this, like, his entire career. That's something to be proud of right there, because he drove that thing all the way up into second. Absolutely amazing drive for McDowell, so just wanted to shout that out.
Yeah, I normally don't shout out guys that finish second in races, but I thought Michael McDowell was dramatically better than just about every other driver out there besides SVG, and that matters. I thought it was interesting, and I know we're going to talk about a couple other people and where they finished, but one, first off, you're welcome, Michael, because I talked shit about you in the points breakdown last week, so yet another person kind of...
Let me know who you're going to talk shit about so I can get some hot bets in this week.
I know, right? Yeah, seriously. But yeah, I did talk a little bit of shit about him kind of like holding up the rest of the Spire group, and he was the bell of the ball for this race, and he is really good at road courses. I don't know that he always has been, but definitely in the last bunch of years, ever since he won the Indy road course when we were there, which was a really cool win for him. Yeah, he's just been really good at these, and it was a really good drive for him. Cool. Wanted to call out, because Fox didn't show it, but Tyler Reddick also had ran through the field. He made up four positions in about like 8 seconds in the last five laps, I think, four or five laps, to finish fifth and go from ninth to fifth. That said, he did get some help, because he passes Austin Dillon really at the start of the white flag lap, and he's got maybe a second and a half to catch to Kyle Busch. And again, Fox doesn't fucking cover it, so you don't know what happens. But somehow he gets by Kyle Busch, and you just see it as the finishing order is going through, and SVG's already celebrating. And it shows Reddick fifth, and then Busch drops eighth. Kyle Busch ran out of fuel. That's what happened. And so, although, again, they didn't cover it, they didn't say what happened, that's what happened. And that's why Tyler Reddick finished another top five in his season instead of sixth. Kyle Busch, though, does come home eighth, and then Austin Dillon comes home sixth. So really great for the other two guys that I've talked shit about. RCR finishing both inside the top 10. I think it's, you know, if the fuel thing wasn't an excuse, it'd be funny to have Austin Dillon finish still, even when they both have a good day, like Austin Dillon still finish ahead. I think that's great. So. What happened to Connor Zilich out there? Because obviously we were talking about him fighting for the lead before he came down.
Yeah, Zilich was fighting for the lead, and he knew that SVG was breathing down his neck, so he really just started way overdriving this car. Every single turn, he had tire smoke, locking up the brakes, overcooking his tires, and he ended up having a tire go down, had to pit, so he drops all the way down to 20th place. So really strong day for Zilich, just didn't get a finish out of the car that he would have liked.
Yeah. And you have the last note here, which is a really good call out. Hendrick cars were nowhere to be found. And remember, it wasn't that many years ago that they were the class of the field. I mean, Larson, Chase, and even Byron have all at times looked like they might be the next road course ringer, the next Jeff Gordon here for Hendrick. Even Bowman won Chicagoland or Chicago street course, right? So, like, all the Hendrick cars are normally good at road courses. I think the best finisher was Larson in 23rd. Is that right?
Yeah, Larson finished 23rd, 24th. Elliott 24th, Bowman 25th, and then Byron was all the way down in 36th. But he got a raw deal early. He ended up, or was it in the third stage?
It was
or something?
Him and Logano. Yeah.
There's some kind of racing deal spun out, and then his day was just kind of over. He got way off strategy, and then Logano dead last in 38th because he just ended up DNF.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll say out of the Hendrick guys, the guy that I thought would have had a better race, and he did. He had some issues, and I don't remember what they were, but Alex Bowman. Bowman has a guy that has improved a lot on the road courses, and you know, how we called out his good finish the week before. I really thought he was going to come out here and have a really, really good race. Not to be seen. And we'll see what Hendrick can bring next time. Obviously, if Trackhouse could be the best Chevys, I guess, at a road course, that's not speaking well for Hendrick. So they'll figure something out before the next one. Cool. Let's go into some other series. IndyCar, what happened this weekend?
Couple of storylines before we get into the IMS road course recap. First one being the Java House Grand Prix of Arlington is returning in 2027. That's no surprise to me. The first inaugural race around the Dallas Cowboys and Texas Rangers stadiums was a smashing success, so no surprise that they renewed it around the same time of the year in March.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Next up, we'll get up into this more when we recap the road course, but IndyCar officiating will no longer take into consideration pit windows and running order of cars on track before deploying a full course caution. So, do you have any comments in this, or should we just go through the race recap and then we can briefly touch on this after we talk about what led to this decision?
Yeah, I mean, well, I do have some comments on it, but let's touch on it afterwards. Let's go through the IMS road course.
Yeah, absolutely. So major caution on lap one. This is a theme this year in IndyCar. Like, what are we doing, guys? Let's get through these couple of first laps, settle in, and then go hard. And Alex Palou does start dominating as he does a lot of times on these road courses. So immediately it's like, uh-oh, is this another Palou runaway? Are the, you know, fans going to be flipping over to the O-Rap series race? Because it was on at the same time as the CW had that O-Raps race. And then this is what happened to cause that IndyCar rule change. So Rossi loses power, and his car literally comes to a full stop on the front straightaway. And they throw what they call a local yellow, but none of the drivers really followed it. I mean, he is on the front stretch of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And there are cars...
They're dropping like 225, 240.
Yeah, I was going to say, these guys are going 200 miles an hour. And he like literally takes the steering wheel off and is like waving it in the air because he's like, why is this not a full course caution? Like, he's super mad. Like, he's on the radio. And eventually he just says, fuck this. He literally just got up out of his car and stands on the track. And it's like, it still took like a bit of time to throw the four course yellow. And it's like, to me, this is totally nonsense. Like, they're like, oh, he's off the racing line, this and that. But then when they showed replays, there's cars going two and three wide past him. And there's an incident and someone makes a mistake, loses control, he's dead. Like, there's no ifs, ands, buts, or about it. This is completely unacceptable from race control. This is nonsense. And I think whoever did not stop this needs to be severely punished and have his duties taken away for quite some time. I hate it.
Yeah, agreed. And look, okay. Normal road courses, localized yellows make sense. Because a normal road course has access paths where you can get to the cars, you can get to the drivers at safe moments where, you know, if he, think about Watkins Glen, anywhere on Watkins Glen, even on the longest straightaway going into the bus stop, there are officials all the way along that. There are breaks in the track wall where they can go and get to the driver, or the driver can get up and he can run over to them and he can get out of there. He can't get out from here. He has to hop over the pit lane wall, which is a bigger wall at Indy because it's a fucking fast track. And then he's got to get all the way over across pit lane, which isn't safe either. He's nowhere to go. And I get that this is a weird road course because it is a normal, you know, full-size IndyCar track, oval, for the big race. But, like, you have to treat it the same way as a road course except for on that straight. Anywhere that you're on the regular course, you have to treat that part like it's the Indy 500. And what would they do if that happened during the Indy 500? Immediate caution. Are you kidding me? This is stupid. This is so stupid. And I, for what it's worth, I didn't even tune in until you said this. And I came in and the first thing I saw was Rossi's interview before I, and just him talking about, I knew I was already on his side because he's so right. And he didn't pull punches. He was kind of sarcastic in the interview. He's just talking about, he talked about a couple different things, actually, not just what had happened there, but just about how stupid, IndyCar is right now. And he's right. And, you know, this is what happens when Roger Penske buys things, I guess.
Did not pull any punches on their podcast either, the Hinch and Rossi podcast. Good. They did not hold back. They went all in, and they even made the comment, like, we've talked about this type of stuff in the past, and we've got scolded, but he goes, I don't care. It needs to be said. Yeah. Everybody knows it. Yeah. I'm putting him on blast. It was awesome. Lost in this, though, Alex Palou ends up at the back of the field because there then was some confusion about full course, local, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. It was just a mess all the way around and kind of messed up the strategy for Alex Palou, which for me, I mean, that's probably going to make the race a little bit more interesting. So
yeah, fuck it.
Whatever, dude. I don't know. The race was a snooze fest until this happened, so I was all for it. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen this and you're listening to this, you've got to see the highlight of Felix Rosenquist going airborne in his car after Stingray Rob does Stingray Rob things. Like, this car was flying, and you know, you don't want to see that because it's not safe, but this was one of those where it's like, whoa, like, cars should not be that high in the air. But like you said, they're on that Indianapolis Motor Speedway, man, the fastest racing on earth, as they like to say, and it truly is. And if you have an incident, man, it gets scary fast.
Yeah, yeah, and that it is cool, but it's it's also scary. And I just love the Stingray Rob doing Stingray Rob things. He's just like, he's been the same way since he came into the sport. He's just a fucking liability out there, and I'll never hate him more than when we were at the Portland race, and I forget who he was racing next to. He shoved, like, three times in a row shoved him off the track. He's just a fucking idiot out there. With a name like that, I kind of want to root for him, but put him in a NASCAR, I guess. Let's see him race something better.
Stingray versus Cletus versus Squirrel McNutt or whatever.
Love it.
End of this race, Christian Lundgaard ends up passing Dave Malukas with 12 to go, and he brings it home for the win, his first with Team McLaren. So really cool to see Christian Lundgaard kind of take some of that pressure off, because I'll talk about this very briefly here, but Tony Kanaan for McLaren has said, if you do not finish top 10 in the standings, you're done. The seat's open and you've got to find another ride. So the pressure's on. Lundgaard, you know, a little bit of luck on this one with some of the strategy and the incidents with the yellows, and he wins the race. So that's a huge weight off his shoulders. Rounding out the podium, we've got little Dave Malukas in second and Graham Rahal in third. So another podium for Rahal this year, which is cool to see.
Nice. Yeah, I was rooting for Davey, for what it's worth. Not that I'm against Lundgaard. Interesting. I like that call out of like McLaren saying, you know, you're gonna finish well, or the seat's gonna be empty. I like public challenges like that. It's not to say that that's exactly how I would run my team if I had a team, but I like that. And you know, McLaren is not the best week in, week out. But when they have opportunities like this, where Lundgaard did probably have the best card outside of Palou, they got to take advantage. And I'm glad. Yeah. Glad Lundgaard got a win. Cool. Well, where are we going next for IndyCar? Because this is about to get fun.
Yeah, it is about to get fun. We're in the month of May, and like we said, we've got the Indy 500 on Sunday, May 24th. And we have this week, we've got practice already underway today. The first practice sessions of the day happened here on Tuesday. We've got practice continuing on Wednesday, Thursday. When does qualifying start? Sunday. I know it's this weekend, and the main qualifying is Sunday. So the Fast 15, as they've changed it to this year, is on Sunday. But you've got qualifying, I think, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So they've got days of qualifying for the Indy 500. It's absolutely insane. I think Carb Day is Friday. You've got the Weenie 500. Saturday's some more qualifying. And then Sunday's when you really need to tune in.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and honestly, this is one of the few qualifying sessions at all of motorsports that's really worth watching. And I know that F1 qualifying is kind of worth watching because it determines who's going to win a race a lot of the time. But this is a really exciting qualifying, especially when they're out there doing their four hot laps. I mean, not just the guys that are going to maybe get the pole position, but the guys that are going to make the race, right? And they scrap together what they needed to scrap together to have this opportunity. You know, we get to see a lot of firsts in that, and you get to see the drama and the excitement of just making a race of this magnitude. It's really, really cool. It's part of the whole the speed weeks, I guess, for lack of a better term, at Indy. So
what's absolutely wild about Indy qualifying too is anybody can win the pole at Indy. I mean, the team that won the pole last year isn't even fielding cars this year. Team Prema, they were a rookie team in IndyCar last year. They took the pole in the Indy 500, and they don't even have enough funding and sponsorship to run their cars this year. So their cars are literally just sitting in a garage somewhere, not being used. So I was watching last year's Sunday qualifying. This is kind of embarrassing, but me and LG were watching it on her phone during my brother and sister-in-law's baby shower. So I was doing the filming for the baby shower. You know, they put me on duty. I cut a video together and put it together for him, like a 20-minute, just, you know, long form video of
nice.
Here's your baby shower, because my grandfather always did that for us as kids. So it was fun to do that for their baby shower. But then all of a sudden it's like, hey, your boy's up. I'm like, my boy's up. And she's like, Larson, he's qualifying right now. So I have that on video, like as I was videoing. Nice. So I'm like, it's kind of cool to have that in that video sprinkled in there. So it took like two minutes off from the duties and then went back to the filming. So it was it's a special day for IndyCar, right? Sitting on the pole for the Indy 500, it's a really big deal. So looking forward to that on Sunday.
Cool. Well, breaking down the NASCAR action at Dover, as we mentioned, again, the Cup guys are going to be racing on Sunday through the All-Star race at 1. We didn't include this, or maybe you can look it up real quick, but there is still going to be like the last chance qualifier and everything, right?
They're still doing the pit crew challenge, the qualifier. They're doing some heat races, like they're inverting the field. I don't know. I didn't bother to look up the weekend schedule, because I don't think I'm going to be able to catch some of it. I'm going to be out of a town again this weekend. But they're doing some things like they always do at the All-Star race. So, you know, as much as I say I'm not excited, they're doing what they can to make it exciting for us fans.
I was going to say, it's not all about you sometimes, BBG. Apparently there's some schedule to the All-Star race, and we just aren't going to tell you because we're not a serious podcast. cool. Well, but there are some full races.
Yes.
We have the EcoSave 150 at 5 Eastern, I'm going to guess on Friday.
Yes.
And we also have the O'Reilly O-Rap Series is at the Bet Rivers 200 at 4 o'clock Eastern on Saturday. So that's going to be fun. I'm guessing, man, I didn't do any research here. I'm guessing they're not putting the PJ1 down until after the Cup or after the O'Reilly race, right?
I have no idea, man. It's been a bit of a busy week. We're struggling here to give the fans what they need. They need the info.
Yeah, we'll tweet it. We'll tweet it with the episode. Forgive us for not knowing whatever kind of crazy shit they're trying to do here. I'm going to just put my prayers up right now and say I hope they're only going to do the PJ1 for the last chance qualifier and the Cup race. Don't ruin the Truck and O'Reilly races, which those vehicles do really well here. Let's have a normal Dover race for them and not fuck it up. Cool. Some previous winners. Last year, Denny Hamlin, and then the year before in 2024, Denny Hamlin as well. And then 3 years ago, Martin Truex Jr., which was his second to last win in the Cup Series. So Toyota. I guess it's all Toyota. But honestly, who knows what we're going to see. It's an all-star race, and not for points or anything, but
$4 million bucks.
Yep, gonna root for Tyler Reddick. Maybe he can get his first one this year. That'd be cool. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the episode. You want to read through the standings for us?
I will, yeah. Not a lot of movement again in the standings. So we've got Tyler Reddick still in first with 567 points. Second place, Denny Hamlin, 129 points behind with 438. Then we've got Mr. Consistency, Chase Elliott in third, Ryan Blaney in fourth. Then we've got Chris Buescher, Ty Gibbs up one in sixth, Kirsten Hocevar down one in seventh, Larson in eighth. Then we've got Keselowski, Bubba Wallace, Christopher Bell, William Byron dropping two spots after that horrendous finish at Watkins Glen. Mm-hmm. Then rounding out the top 16, we got Ryan Preece, Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, and SVG Shane Van Gisbergen back in the 16th spot, doing what he needed to do, getting, I believe, 68 or 69 points at Watkins Glen. So jumping himself up three spots with that dominating performance.
Yeah. Couple call-outs here. We didn't really talk about it when we were breaking down the race, but Bubba Wallace was on the same strategy as Tyler Reddick and was actually running really good. Bubba's not great at road courses either, but Watkins Glen actually is one of his better ones. And he was having a pretty good race and then got taken out by, was it Josh Berry? Josh Berry was in a different incident. I don't remember who. Was it John Hunter Nemechek, I think? I got into Bubba, but anyway. Bubba was having a really good race. Somehow he still gains a position in the points, but he did get some good stage points, I guess. Tyler Reddick's lead is nuts, man. 129 points. Woo! That's like, he gains 11 points on everyone, every race, 12 races in. That's crazy. Also, Tyler Reddick is off to the best average start through 12 races of anyone since 1994, and the fifth best average start through 12 races of anyone in NASCAR history, which is kind of nuts in today's age. Other call-outs here. Like you said, SVG now in the playoffs. We called that out last week, right? We said, look, he's not in right now. Expect him to kind of jump in, and let's see if he can stay. Daniel Suarez, I thought, would have had a better Watkins Glen race, but again, I expect him to kind of perform really well here through the summer. It's better racetracks for him. Consider just him to continue to move up. Joey Logano, he was my hot take, I guess, last week, that he will not make the playoffs, or at least Alex Bowman will make the playoffs before Joey Logano does. Still standing by that. Joey's last place finish not doing him any favors. Ross Chastain just shits the bed across all three series, continues to lose points. Michael McDowell, good finish, gets him up to 21st. He's 60 points out. Still a pretty good gap there. Kyle Busch moves up. Austin Dillon moves up. They're trying to make their summer hunt for the playoffs here. Anyone else you want to call out? Anything else here?
Denny Hamlin, 624 laps led, so it continues to lead laps. Not a lot this week, obviously, at the road course, mm-hmm. but man, 624 laps led, and I think the next guy is Larson with 499. Yeah, so mm-hmm. I mean, a big lead in laps led. And then look at Tyler Reddick's top 10s. He's got 9 top 10s out of the 12 races, a 75% hit rate on top 10. That's good work right there. That is amazing. And then 8 of those 9 are top 5. So when he's up there, mm-hmm. he is up there and going for the win. So you love to see it. This has been, like you said, man, domination, gaining ground in every race. This is wild to watch. And for me personally, I am so much more invested race to race because we have full season too. Points than like getting rid of the win and in. Like, thank you, NASCAR. I am so glad we finally pulled the trigger on that because, man, the win and in thing was just, it was nonsense after a while. I was getting so sick of like, oh, the guy wins the fourth race of the year, he's going to coast to the playoffs. Like, there's no reason for that. Motorsports is meant to be a full season thing, and then I do like that we have the chase. So we'll see how the chase goes, but loving the full points.
I forget if we even broke this down when we did our very first episode or episode 0 this year and talked about the new points and everything, but like the thing that is an unsung hero or something worth calling out is that I'm not rooting against parity. I'm not rooting against having a bunch of winners. And I know we have not had a bunch of winners this year because Tyler Reddick's winning everything, but like I don't care if like SVG wins a race here or AJ Allmendinger wins the next one or Ross Chastain or Austin Dillon or Kyle Busch or people that are outside. I don't care anymore. It's fine. But before, it used to take good cars out of the playoffs. Like Tyler Reddick and Bubba Wallace, for what it's worth, 2311's never been a slouch, but like they had to scratch and claw into the playoffs a couple times as the 1, 2, or 3 final drivers that could make it in on points because that's all that were available. Or 3 positions on points, which was just nuts. Now, yeah, this bubble is great. I mean, there's a number of drivers here. I know last time I was like, I like the playoffs as it is with exactly who's in it. Shane's going to be in there. Chase is probably going to be in there, but who's going to drop out? It might be Priest. It might be Suarez. But, like, I feel like they should be in there too. I don't know. I'm really, really curious. It looks like, to me, I've got slightly more than 16 drivers that I wish could make the playoffs. And it really is going to be based on merit this year alone to say who should be in more than ever. Hopefully fucking Joey Logano will be out. And hopefully Alex Bowman has some better finishes, dude. Get up there. I want him, if he could just finish ahead of Joey Logano, that's going to be, put it on my gravestone or something. That's going to be a hell of a call out. All right, well, we said we were going to have a quicker episode. We did not. Take us out of here. Let's relax this shit.
Another episode of the Big One Podcast. As always, Twitter @podcastbigone, emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Big One. This has been Baby G.
This has been B-Boy. Thanks, all. See you next week.